May it please the court, John Elwood on behalf of DaVita. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
You'll have to keep track of your time.
Okay.
But of course
you may.
Subject
to the court's questions, I plan to focus my argument during the Amy's Kitchen case on whether the change in plan terms violated the Medicare secondary payers provisions. An argument during Virginia Mason on whether such violations are actionable even if Medicare hasn't made payment. To prevent private insurers from pushing Medicare-eligible patients with end-stage renal disease or ESRD off their plans, Congress imposed two prohibitions to ensure plans met their statutory obligations to be primary payers during the first 30 months of a patient's Medicare eligibility. Amy's Kitchen argues, and the district court held, that because the plans here facially singled out dialysis for disfavored out-of-network treatment, the plan here did not differentiate in the benefits it provides between ESRD patients and others, nor did it take into account that an individual is eligible for Medicare benefits because of ESRD. That was error. The only plausible reason to single out dialysis alone among all possible treatments that Amy's covers is that virtually all ESRD patients are Medicare eligible and virtually all dialysis spending is for ESRD and not for any other condition.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you about both of those aspects. It is true, is it not, that there are people without end-stage renal disease who are on dialysis?
That is correct. It is about 3% overall. There were 28,000 in, it's a condition called acute kidney injury, which there are about 28,000 in 2016 versus about 800,000 for dialysis, so about 3%.
On the other piece of it, there even under Medicare payments, there's a period of time when people are not eligible for those payments, and there are people who, at least in that first category, who are never Medicare eligible potentially. So isn't it also true that there are some people who are not eligible who are also covered by this policy?
Well, there are some people who have end-stage renal disease who are not eligible for Medicare because of immigration status or because they haven't worked long enough. But again, it's a very small percentage of people, and I don't think that there's any dispute that it just in terms of sheer numbers, there's virtual overlap between dialysis and end-stage renal disease. Again, it's a difference of about 3% overall. In addition,
let me follow up by saying, is it your position that the statute requires some sort of numerical parity if there is a great preponderance of one category versus another, or is it just you have to treat everybody alike in the policy and it falls more heavily on some than on others?
I think the thing is you just have to figure out what Congress meant when they say differentiate in any manner. And Amy's Kitchen takes the position and the court below takes the position that as long as you treat all dialysis patients differently or treat them the same, that's not differentiating. And if that were the statute that Congress were going to write, they would have written a much different statute. They could have just said...
Why?
Why?
I mean,
because
what does differentiate mean?
Well, treat differently. And I think that if you were just going to be treating, end-stage renal disease patients differently from people with a single rare kidney condition, 28,000 people nationwide, 3% total, that they would have written a much different statute. They wouldn't have had to say in any manner. They would have said you can't treat end-stage renal disease patients differently than other patients needing dialysis. I think.
Well, but in that phrase is not absent of meaning, even if it doesn't mean what you suggest. For example, treat differently in any manner might not mean monetary distinction in payments. It might mean more forms to fill out or more doctor's notes or some other irritating procedural problem.
But they could have written it so that it was just vis-a-vis other patients needing dialysis, just distinguish between ESRD patients and other patients needing dialysis. That would have taken care of it. And the fact that they use the phrase in any manner, that's a broad term presumably they meant it for some broad purpose. And the legislative history, as we pointed out in the brief, talks about direct or indirect. And so it just, I think that Congress, it just doesn't seem realistic. We would argue that Congress went to the trouble of enacting this statute and amending it repeatedly to enhance enforcement if all it was comparing ESRD to was a relatively rare condition, which isn't even that expensive to treat. I think that that's our basic submission, is that they would not have written such a broad statute, revisited it so many times, and, you know, spilled so much ink on it, if all we were talking about here was don't treat ESRD patients differently than this rare group of kidney patients. In addition, I think the reason you can say that this is differentiating is because virtually all dialysis spending is for ESRD. Nobody cares about AKI spending. The amicus here on behalf of Amy's Kitchen, they focused entirely on ESRD spending, because even more identity between dialysis and ESRD patients is identity between dialysis spending and ESRD spending. Because again, AKI, it usually only takes a few treatments for people to get over that, versus over 100 per year. And so all the action is on the ESRD front. And as far as preponderance goes...
Can I interrupt for just a minute? One of the points you're making, in fact, the central point you're making, is that Congress could have written this differently and to your ear or eye more clearly. But that's true for an awful lot of statutes, that Congress could write things better. Our business is looking at somewhat awkwardly written statutes. And I have trouble reading it in any other way than Congress saying all dialysis patients should be treated the same way, rather than dialysis treatment treat patients should be treated the same as cancer patients and other patients. It just doesn't read very well the way you want it to read.
Well, they just say patients without ESRD, or other patients, I think is the phrase, and patients with other equally expensive conditions are just the same. And I think that it doesn't seem realistic to me that Congress would spend so much time, you know, enacting this, increasing enforcement, if all they had to do all along would just say, we're not going to cover dialysis. And if, in addition to this, there is this language in the regulation that says that, you know, failure to cover renal dialysis is differentiation, which is inconsistent with AMES. That's in the Federal Register. It wasn't actually codified, but it's there. And then finally, you don't have to have that much predominance in order to say that what they're doing is trying to go after this disfavored class, the ESRD. What AMES does when they say, alone among all treatments, we're going to single out dialysis, you don't have to have it be perfect tailoring where it only covers the protected class of ESRD people. The Supreme Court said in the Bray versus Alexandria Women's Clinic said that you can infer an intent to disfavor a class if the targeted conduct is engaged in predominantly by a particular class of people. And again, 97% about are of the people who do dialysis are ESRD. And, compare that to sickle cell anemia, where, you know, everyone would say that if you target sickle cell anemia, it's against African Americans, even though something like 14% of sickle cell patients are not African American. Here, it's 3%.
Counsel, it seems to me that if Congress wanted to do what you are suggesting, it would have written a completely different statute that says that all serious illnesses must be compensated at the same level, or something along those lines, something exceedingly different from what exists here.
I think, let me see here. I disagree, Your Honor, because it says differentiate in the benefits it provides between individuals having end-stage renal disease, that's perfectly clear, and other individuals covered by such plan on the basis of end-stage renal disease, the need for renal dialysis, or any other matter. The fact that they included both in any other matter and on the basis of the existence of end-stage, on the basis of the existence of end-stage renal disease, suggests that, you know, they didn't write this whole statute just to address, you know, this vanishingly small group of patients, 28,000. Again, the orphan drug statute, they consider that for, you know, rare diseases. The cutoff there is 200,000 patients. This is less than, it's a little more than a tenth of that cutoff. So this is a very rare disease, acute kidney injury. We cited Nijhawan versus Holder in our brief that Congress doesn't write statutes to do very little things. And this statute doesn't accomplish.
I'm not sure that's right. Congress does all kinds of stuff.
Well, the presumption is at least that you don't write a statute to have little effect. And what this would do is just say, you can cut off dialysis. And one of the first things the responsible agency said is, if you don't have dialysis, that is differentiation. They admittedly said that in the Federal Register site, and not in a regulation, but anyway. In any event, if there are two different prohibitions that they have to satisfy, and even if you don't think that this is differentiation, I think that Amy's plan also unlawfully takes into account the fact that ESRD patients are Medicare eligible. Because singling out for treatment, the one treatment that is almost always Medicare eligible, validly gives rise to a plausible inference that Medicare was considered. If the cause containment or worries about market power or anything else were the reason why Amy's Kitchen did this, they would have presumably done other things. There are plenty of drugs that are very expensive, plenty of therapies that are very expensive. The chemotherapy is not on here. Autoimmune disorders, multiple sclerosis are not here. Insulin is not here. Drugs that are still on patent and thus where there is necessarily market power aren't on there. Orphan drugs that only are made by a single manufacturer aren't on there. And I think it's fair to say that if there is virtually perfect identity between people who are Medicare eligible and dialysis patients, that the fact that they singled out that one thing, you can draw the conclusion, just for purposes of surviving a motion to dismiss, that this is because they're Medicare eligible. And when you're thinking about plausibility, just consider what counsel for Amy's Kitchen said in the hearing below. They said, and this is after they said, suppose that you could get truth serum and say, ask somebody whether they consider it. And they say, yeah, we did consider it. Counsel said, that's not a problem, we'd be fine because, quote, nobody has to ignore the realities of the market that people with ESRD are eligible to enroll in Medicare, unquote. That's in the SER page 25.
Counsel, you're down to about 2.5 minutes. Did you wish to save some rebuttal time?
Sure. I'll end with that point. That I think that at a minimum, this is enough to survive plausibility. And with that, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may do that. And we will now hear from Mr. Short.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Floyd Short, and I represent Amy's Kitchen, which is a family-owned organic foods company, and their ERISA plan, which they self-fund and administer for the benefit of their employees and their families. The appellant, DaVita, provided dialysis services in this case to patient one, and Amy's plan paid all of the dialysis benefits that were defined by the plan to DaVita, pursuant to an assignment of benefits that was made by patient one. DaVita did not like the amount of those payments, but as with all ERISA plans, Amy's plan has discretion to define the benefits in its plan, and those are the benefits that were paid here. The dialysis treatment benefits that DaVita received were made pursuant to the dialysis preservation program that's in the record at ER 56 and 57. And that plan was imposed to address the skyrocketing costs of dialysis. Those costs are something that DaVita tries to shift onto ERISA plans like Amy's. And as a result of the cost containment measures that Amy's plan took, as well as other plans that took similar approaches to cost containment for dialysis across the country, DaVita sued Amy's plan and several other plans. In this case, U.S. District Judge John Tiger dismissed DaVita's complaint in its entirety. He issued a 17-page, well-reasoned opinion that is right on all counts. He held, correctly, that DaVita failed to state a claim under the Medicare Secondary Payer Act, that DaVita lacked standing on its claim for benefits under ERISA, because all of the benefits that were defined in the plan were paid, and that DaVita lacks standing to assert any other claims under ERISA, such as its breach of fiduciary duty claim and its equitable claims. because the
counsel, let me ask you specifically about the issue that opposing counsel has discussed at some length. Is it your position, I assume, that the statute does not require parity in the percentage of claim paid between dialysis and other procedures or other types of illness? And I cannot recall the answer to this, but are all other procedures and conditions in the plan treated at the same level? In other words, 80% of the usual and customary for everything except dialysis, or are there other differentiations?
So I think the answer to Your Honor's first question is the statute does not require some sort of parity or an examination of the impacts or effects of the plan benefit. In other words, you don't have to look at what percentage of dialysis treatments go to ESRD patients versus other types of patients. Nothing in the statute requires that. Nothing in the regulation requires that. In fact, there's a regulation that we've referred to in our brief that I think is very important. That's at 42 CFR 411.161C. And that regulation provides that it's permissible to have uniform limitations on dialysis. And it gives an example where a plan limits its coverage for dialysis sessions to 30 sessions per year, and states that the plan would not be violating the differentiated provision.
And even if, for example, we'd allow 50 physical therapy visits or other kinds of procedures?
Well, Judge Tiger held, and correctly so, that the relevant comparison has to be focused on the benefit that's provided, the treatment, a particular treatment, as opposed to trying to compare what really are apples and oranges between one type of treatment and the benefit for that and other types of treatment. What matters under the statute is that patients who are similarly situated and that they receive dialysis treatment, those need to be treated similarly. And that's what Amy's plan does.
So is part of your argument that you think the statute is clear, so we'd be at Chevron step one, presumably, and looking at the meaning of the statute. But if it's ambiguous in the way that opposing counsel posits, I take it you would say the regulation is a reasonable interpretation and it doesn't require anything more than internal parity with respect to dialysis. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. I think that's absolutely right. And the statute is clear. And I think it's important to focus on that statutory language. The take into account provision states that a plan may not take into account that an individual is entitled to or eligible for Medicare benefits based on an ESRD diagnosis. So the focus is, are they taking into an account that an individual is entitled to Medicare based on ESRD? It's not, counsel raised the oral argument before the district court, and my response to a question from the court about whether a plan can make reference to Medicare in any way in making its plan definitions and determinations. And my answer was, there's nothing in this statute that bars that. What it bars is treating an individual differently because they have Medicare or because they have ESRD. And Amy's plan does not do that. The other part of the statute, the differentiate provision, the language is, may not differentiate in the benefits it provides between, on the one hand, individuals having end-stage renal disease, and on the other hand, individuals covered by such plan on the basis of end-stage renal disease, the need for renal dialysis, or another need. So as Judge Tiger correctly held, the comparison that needs to be made is between ESRD patients and non-ESRD patients with respect to the benefit, in this case, the benefit for dialysis. And AMI's plan very clearly has a single program for all dialysis treatment that applies regardless of the condition requiring the need for dialysis. I identified what I think is probably the most important regulation, so that even if you thought that the statutory language had ambiguity, again, I don't see that it does, the regulations certainly are consistent with that. And Judge Tiger addressed one of those very regulations that DaVita identified in his opinion. That's the one at 60 Federal Register, 45344. Again, DaVita wants to try to make a comparison that is not the correct one. As Judge Tiger pointed out, you need to compare patients who have ESRD or Medicare with similarly situated individuals. And those similarly situated individuals are those who need dialysis. DaVita does not cite a single case in support of its reading of the statute, and that's because it can't. There was a decision just last year from the Southern District of Ohio in the DaVita versus Marietta Memorial Hospital case that rejected all of these arguments, and I think that's worth reference. And Judge Tiger identified in his opinion the National Renal Alliance versus Blue Cross and Blue Shield case from the Northern District of Georgia that is very much on all fours with this case. In that case, an insurance plan reduced its dialysis benefit amount by 88%. And the court held that was not a violation of the MSPA because it provided the same level of reimbursement for dialysis treatment regardless of the insured's reason for receiving the treatment. I'm aware that counsel is planning to address the private right of action in the second argument today, but I would like to just speak briefly to that because I think that is a clear alternative basis to affirm Judge Tiger's ruling, and it's fully supported in the record. I'm sure counsel for Virginia Mason will ably make those arguments, but I do want to emphasize that again, the case law here is clear and unanimous that in order to have a private right of action, Medicare has to make a payment. And that's based on the structure and text of the statute. The Biomed case, and this is the Biomed case from the Sixth Circuit, it's Biomed of Tennessee. In that case, the Sixth Circuit did a very careful and thorough reading and analysis of the statute. And it concluded that the private right of action is triggered when a plan terminates a plan holder's coverage, because that's what happened in that case. The patient got ESRD and went on Medicare and got terminated. And the other part of the Sixth Circuit's holding thereby induces Medicare to make a conditional payment on its behalf. This statute is about protecting Medicare. It's about making it a secondary payer that steps in only if necessary, and ensuring that primary plans, like Amy's, make the primary payment and make it so that Medicare does not have to step in. And in this case, that's exactly what Amy's did. They made the primary payment in an amount above Medicare. Medicare, there was no impact on Medicare. I'd also like to address briefly, unless the court has further questions on the Medicare Secondary Payer Act, I'd like to address the ERISA claims. There's really two issues there. There's a claim for benefits under ERISA that DaVita made, and Judge Tiger held that for that claim, there was no injury in fact. And that is correct. There's no injury in fact because the patient and then DaVita by assignment received the defined benefits. There's no dispute about that. In fact, it's integral to DaVita's complaint that they were paid the amount that's defined as usual and reasonable in the plan. Because there was no injury, in fact, to the patient. The patient got all the benefits that were provided for in the plan, received all the dialysis treatment they were supposed to get, and importantly, were never balance billed. So DaVita makes an argument that there is a threat of balance billing in cases such as this. But this threat is a phantom. DaVita has not balance billed patient one, didn't allege in its complaint that it balance billed patient one. In fact, the amicus on its side acknowledges that DaVita has not ever balance billed patients. That it doesn't do that. And there's good reason for that. Probably the most important of which is that a Medicare provider like DaVita is not allowed to balance bill someone who's enrolled in Medicaid. They're not allowed to do it. So this is not a kind of injury, in fact. It's too speculative and too hypothetical to satisfy standing. The other ERISA issue in the case, which Judge Tiger got correct as well, is the claims under ERISA that DaVita brought for breach of fiduciary duty and equitable relief. Those claims were properly dismissed in this case because the assignment that patient one made to DaVita does not encompass them. The Spindex case that this court issued in 2009 is right on point. In the Spindex case—
Excuse me, counsel? You said 2009. I thought it was 2014. Are we talking about the same case?
You're right. I'm sorry. I misstated that.
That's okay. I just want to be sure I have the citation that you want us to look at.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Spindex Physical Therapy. I believe Judge Fletcher wrote the opinion in that case.
Yeah, yes, that's correct.
In that case, the assignment had very broad language. The assignment by the patient was for my rights and benefits under this policy. And in that case, the provider argued that this encompassed any type of claim that could be made. And that was denied. Our case—
Thank you, counsel. You have used up your time, and I think we understand your position on all the issues.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So we'll turn back to Mr. Elwood for the remaining rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are three points I would like to make, and I will have to move fairly quickly. The first argument is opposing counsel argues that you can only focus on dialysis because otherwise you can't compare apples to apples. It's all apples to oranges, but I disagree. What we have here is that Amy's Kitchen pays full freight Blue Cross Blue Shield negotiated rates for every other condition except for dialysis. Dialysis alone is singled out, so you don't have to say what's apples to apples. Everything else gets the rates that Blue Cross negotiated. And I think that that's a totally valid reading of individuals having end-stage renal disease and other individuals covered by such plan. The statutory language doesn't say anything at all about being limited to other dialysis patients. So, and again, that brings us to the take into account. And the opposing counsel tries to slip out of this argument by saying that it only applies to considering an individual's Medicare eligibility. But I think that, you know, when you recognize that it overwhelmingly is covered by Medicaid, overwhelmingly the condition is covered by Medicare, that is considering the individual is covered by it. And certainly patient one could have gone on. Secondly, I would like to address this 30 treatments provision, which is, I don't think that you have to read very much into that. That's 411.161 and 42 CFR. I think a better explanation of that provision, it doesn't apply of its own force here because it limits it to a certain number of treatments, and that's not what we have here. Instead, we have a cutback on payment rates. And I don't think you can tease that much out of it because Amy Kitchen is saying that you can differentiate against dialysis and also differentiate between different types of dialysis, because 30 treatments would take care of acute kidney injury, but not end-stage renal disease. And that is prohibited by literally the provision right ahead of it, subsection B, Romanet 5. So I think a better way to read it is to say that it's just saying, as a general matter, you can limit it. You could say only 30 treatments for dialysis, only 6 months of insulin, only whatever, a certain number of chemotherapy treatments. Because you can have a bad plan, you just can't have a discriminatory plan. Finally, on the balance billing, we don't balance bill because it says because they're the primary payer. And if you look at 54 Federal Register 41718, it says that if the when a plan fails to comply with the law, it is the provider's responsibility to pursue collection from the plan.
Thank you, counsel. You have exceeded your allotted time, and I think we understand all the issues from your briefing and your argument today. So the case just argued is submitted, and we appreciate very much helpful and thoughtful arguments from both counsel. And the case just argued is submitted. Mr. Elwood, I know you're staying on for the next round, but we'll get the other counsel on board as well.